just open up, you know, it's been a while, maybe people are confused, want to know what happened.
Probably don't think we, they probably forgot we exist.
Probably forgot we exist, and that's fair enough, just like my dad did. So, you know, you're probably assuming it's Sebastian's fault, which you would be correct to make the assumption of, but it's actually my fault. So here's what happened. The last time we recorded, we went to the pub together shortly after, and we both needed to pee at the same time. We went to the same urinal. Not the same, we went to be, you know, opposite sides of each other on at a...
You have to leave a gap.
Yeah, of course. And Sebastian caught me looking, as men usually do, but I definitely looked a bit too long.
And you know I'm insecure about the size and everything. So.
That's why I was looking for so long.
Because you couldn't find it, yeah.
I was just gobsmacked by it.
I heard that one before.
And so there was just, you know, a lot of awkwardness and tension after that, and so we just took a little break from each other, really. But we've gotten through it.
Well, there's actually one more thing I wanted to say.
Oh, yeah?
Dylan... He put his finger up my bum. He tickled my gooch. And yeah, that's it.
You said you liked it.
I was lying.
Oh no.
What was I meant to say? I hate this. Then you would have just done more.
Oh dear God, I can't yes and that. Anyway, guys, welcome to Dylan Sebastian.
That's definitely like the rudest I've ever been. That was very like, yeah.
I think we've been just as rude before, but definitely the darkest.
Yeah.
That was super dark.
It's been a while though. Dylan's been away.
Yes, no, yeah. In actuality, yeah. And I apologise if you guys missed this, but I just had a crazy couple of weeks. I moved house, then I went home to Ireland for a week and a bit, and I ended up being in a movie. So. Yeah, it was literally impossible to do the podcast. There's so much shit going on, but happy to be back. And yeah, guys, welcome to Dylan Sebastian. Welcome back to Dylan Sebastian and Simpsons Podcast, a podcast that is a Paul's Burgers podcast in an alternate universe.
Mm.
Yeah. But yeah, it is great to be back. I'm sorry that it's been so long. I didn't want it to be this long, but shit just kept popping up, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, glad to be back. Today we are back reviewing. And look, when you think about it, it's maybe for the best we took a little break because we're catching up with the show.
Yeah.
Because season 35 isn't out yet and we're more than halfway through season 34. So, you know, it was probably for the best to take a little break. So today we are reviewing Bartless, which is the 15th episode of the 34th season. And shall we just jump into it?
Let's do it.
Let's go. So we open up in the school. It's Book Buddies Wednesday. Milhouse and Bart are both reading some children's books to some kindergartners. Milhouse is reading his one, being like, "Oh, Papa Bear said someone's been sleeping in my bed. This book is so unrealistic. Dad sleep on the bench in the garage, right?" And the little child feels so sorry for him. And Bart's reading a book to a young girl who looks really nervous. The book is called "Everyone Loves Their Job." He's reading the book and it's like, "Every day the milkman brings fresh milk to your milk box." And the girl is clearly not enjoying it. And Bart tells her that every milk bottle is a fart. Inside every milk bottle lies a fart monster. She cheers up, and then Bart starts drawing in the book. He tells a really inventive fun animation being used here. He tells her that cows eat pigs' boogers, which turns their butter into milk, and then the cows get loaded up into space, and space goats and astro donkeys headbutt, and then the shuttles bursts, and that's where milk comes from. And he's now telling the story to all the kids, and all the kids love it, and they all start drawing in the books, and we see all this happening. Bart seems really proud of himself.
It's sort of reminding me of like when you're in school.
Yeah.
And any textbook you open just has penises everywhere.
Mm.
And like mustaches drawn. I'm not gonna lie, I was one of those people that drew penises.
Same, 100%. It was hilarious.
It's just
not in your own book though, but in your friend's book.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then they'd get you back eventually.
It's just crazy, like my school's just full of these textbooks with penises.
Yeah, because they're probably still there,
Like in a Catholic school. It's like...
Yeah, that's a good point actually. I never really thought about that from the teacher's perspective. They know they're there. But they're not bothered.
Unspoken.
Yeah, exactly. Just pretend, ignore it. Like, yeah, that's mental to think of. There's probably still some penises you drew.
Oh yeah,
in those schools right now. I hope so too. That's your legacy.
I did. Oh, I remember one time I did like a huge one on the first
really
page,
detailed.
On like the index page at the front. I did like a giant one that covered the whole page.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
Was it detailed and veiny?
Oh yeah.
Like the ones in Superbad, just like so perfect.
Oh man,
so realistic. Good. Those ones are so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, the kids are all loving drawing in the books and. We see Bart looking over all of them, and a teacher comes up, and he just does a great gulp. And also, you see some of the other books, and some of the details there were great. One of them was called Everyone Sometimes Has Dry Skin, Charlotte's Web History, and Where the Mild Wings Are, which is great. We then cut to Marge and Homer giving out to him in the house. They're both outraged, saying that he destroyed 25 library books.
Haven't we told you that books are precious?
I'm afraid to count how many times I've said that.
And Bart defends himself, but they say he ruins everything, including the family Christmas album. We get a picture of the family Christmas album. It's just Bart with like fake fangs going to bite Homer. He's like, there's not even such a thing as Christmas fangs. I had to wear a scarf to midnight mass. Mary says she just wants to stop worrying about what he'll do next. She starts running out of breath, and Homer's like, tap me in. Tells him that he's a destroyer, and then Lisa comes in saying that he put hot dog water in the coffee machine, shouts at me like, destroyer! And he runs out of breath, and then Mary's like, tap me in, I'm ready. And she asks Bart what his least favorite vegetable is. He says, Swiss chard. I had to look up what Swiss chard was.
Yeah, what is that?
It's like a lettuce, but it's a bit more kind of like dense. Like, just a little bit more of a bite to it. So, yeah, fair enough, that would be your least favourite.
You know what my least favourite vegetable is?
Mm.
And it's not even because I don't like the taste.
Yeah.
It's because there's not many foods I don't like.
Mm.
I think the only,
yeah,
food,
same,
the only foods I don't like is raisins and sultanas.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's not sultanas either, no.
But it's radish.
Radish, okay.
Because I can eat it, but I'm just like... What the fuck is this? This is nothing to it. It's just like dry,
it's
bland.
It's boring, yeah.
All, like, yeah.
Yeah, mine would be beetroot.
I love beetroot.
Really? No,
yeah.
I don't like beetroot. I think beetroot is a very selfish vegetable because when it's in a sandwich, it just takes over. It's all you can taste. For me, anyway, all I can taste is the beetroot.
Yeah. No, I like it on its own, in a salad or something.
Yeah, fair enough. But no, I'm not a fan. But back to my Swiss chard, and Samara's just like, you're looking at a whole load of Swiss chard sandwiches. And Homer's like, you're never allowed to read a book again. Then we cut to them having a meeting with Miss Payton the next day. This is her second episode.
Yeah.
This is the character who took over Edda Krabappel, obviously, voiced brilliantly again by Kerry Washington. They tell Miss Payton that they're on her side and they're lucky she only has to deal with him for a year. And she's like, well, possibly two, but that's a different conversation, a different meeting. They tell her the punishment that they have planned for Bart are cruel and unusual. Homer's like, every day he wakes up, he'll regret ever being born. And Peyton shows them that the teachers are now printing out books for the kindergartners and getting them to draw on it. And one of the teachers are like, the kids haven't shown this much. Are you really going to start
not
eating, Chris?
Can you imagine?
You fucking got me.
Just in the middle of
I was going to murder you. There is nothing I hate more than when people start eating on a podcast.
And crisps as well.
The worst thing to be
I reckon we should have just done that as a prank on the people listening.
It'd be a funny...
And not even mentioned
it'd be a funny opener, where we're just eating food and talking. Oh, it's the worst. Yeah, there's something I hate more. I'm like the opposite of ASMR. Like, someone's eating on a podcast, I have to skip over it. Like, when they finish. Like, I can't even enjoy this conversation because this is so disturbing to me. Just hearing your chewing over, like, high-quality audio, you know. Oh, terrible.
I don't get it.
Yeah, it's all right. Good prank. But, hey, proper Bart fashion here.
Eat my shorts.
Yeah, because even though this is called Bartless, this is actually one of the most Bart-focused episodes in quite a while.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
Yeah, very fitting. But yeah, one of the teachers is like, the kids haven't shown this much interest in books. They haven't shown this much interest in reading in years, and Bart was clearly getting them to connect with the work in an interactive way. And Marge is like, that's what he told us, but we didn't believe him. And we cut to Ralph drawing in a book, and he's like, and one evening Ralph decided to go for a walk in the moonlight. And then one of the teachers is like, this is the first book he didn't try to kiss or wears a hat. Bart is such a wonderful kid. May I hold a couple who created Bart? All that's happening, you can see Ralph in the background drawing on the door, and drawing on the wall, creating a door that's open, and he goes through the door Great little background detail that comes back later. But
yeah, that was cool.
That was so good. Yeah, so creative. We cut to Marge and Homer leaving the building, and Homer's like,
"What just happened in there?"
"Bart, good. Nothing makes sense anymore.
I don't think this is our car."
"What color is our car, Marge?"
"Black? No, that's not it. How was it everyone else saw the best in Bart and we didn't?"
And they come to the conclusion that they definitely like Bart. Sorry, they definitely love Bart, but they don't like Bart.
And what annoyed me was that Homer had red wine.
Yeah,
in the
back garden.
Why is he not a Duff beer?
He never drinks wine. Yeah, that's true. I guess it's like they're outside in the back garden together sharing a bottle of wine. I guess they're just like drowning in their own sorrows for realizing they don't like their own kid. But yeah, like you said, they're drinking wine in the back garden.
I mean, that's yeah, I shouldn't really be focusing on that, but I was just like...
No, fair point. Yeah, he's drinking... I don't think we've ever seen him drink wine in 34 years. Yeah, I can't recall any other moment. Yeah, it is a weird drink for Homer. It doesn't suit him as a character. But yeah, Homer's like defending themselves, being like, "You know, he just wears you down. I'm the strongest person I know." And Marge feels that deep down they may resent him since they didn't plan on having a family, and maybe they blame him for the opportunities they miss out on in their young adult lives. And she's like, "I just wish we could see him the way everyone else does without the emotional gunk." And Homer's like, "That's just not how it works. Not how life works." And a big storm happens and it flashes, and we cut to them waking up in a different bed, clearly not the same bed, in their own house. And they're in this really nice, gorgeous house overlooking like the Springfield, you know, Hollywood sign. Homer's like, "Should we wake..." Or Marge's like, should we wake up the kids?" And Homer's like, "Sure, let's take one each, you know, the perfect family." And we see the same Christmas photo from before, but excluding Bart. So we see we're now in an alternate dimension where Bart was never born, basically. We cut to a montage of a Bartless morning. We see photos around the house, the family all having these like really wonderful vacations, but they all look boring. They all look like clearly perfect, but like nothing happened, you know, without Bart's presence. We see Marge and Homer dancing their way into the shower together, and their butts form love hearts. We see Lisa adding a doll to her shrine in Malibu Stacy's. And you see Homer is now holding a briefcase, a work jacket, and a belt. So he clearly just cares about his job a lot more. And we see Marge is a chief of medicine. We cut to the hospital. She's like strolling in, looking like she's in a hurry with a nurse. She's like, what are we looking at today? And the nurse is like, "I heard Dr. Vargas is cheating on Dr. Chain with that gorgeous new resident." It's like, "Okay, but what about our patients?" Like, "No idea, but I made up a chart of who's sleeping with who." It was a funny little detail. It was like she was in like a Grey's Anatomy type drama hospital, but she doesn't care about... She is actually a passionate doctor, but everybody else is involved in the drama.
It reminded me...
Well done.
It made me think about... I'm not sure what show it is. It might be called Doctors.
Doctors,
or something.
The BBC, like soap opera.
No, it's an American show about some doctors.
Yeah,
like
there's so many.
It's like a serious drama.
Mm.
And I don't know if you've seen it, but online people have been like taking the piss out of it because of this one scene that has really bad acting.
Oh, right.
It's like, I don't know if it rings a bell, but he goes like, what does he say? He's like, "I am a doctor." No, what is it?
I mean, that's a good enough line already.
It's like,
"I am a doctor.
I am a surgeon. I am a surgeon." Because basically he's not allowed to perform like some surgery because he did something wrong.
Right.
It's the guy, you might know his name. When he was a kid, he was in Spiderwick Chronicles.
Spiderwick Chronicles? I've never seen it actually, no.
You recognise it.
As a Butterfield, right? Not him, but he's the main kid in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Man, yeah.
No, I never saw it. But okay, this guy would not have to be in some shit hospital drama, basically.
Yeah.
"I am a surgeon."
I'll show you. After.
I'll see if I can find the audio online and we can give people a snippet and see what we're talking about, yeah.
"I'm a surgeon. I am not leaving your office until you reinstate me.
What are you doing, Sean? Do you think ordering me to do something will change my mind? Do you really think it's a good idea to try and bully me?
I am a surgeon. I am..."
am a surgeon.
Do you realize that you're proving my point? That you're acting immature, showing that you don't know how to communicate and you can't control your emotions.
I am a surgeon.
But you do have a talent that I value. So I'm gonna give you one last chance to maintain your dignity and leave my office. Now. Because if I have to call security, you understand that I'm also gonna have to fire you.
Surgeon!
Marge is outraged that this hospital is so sex-obsessed and melodramatic, and she goes in this room, we see they're actually in a vet. There's so much detail in this weird little job of Marge. They're working in a vet, not a regular hospital. And she untangles a snake, gets a chew toy out of a dog, and frees a hamster from a tube. And while this is happening, we see the rest of the doctors just like making out in the background, not caring about what's going on. And she gets called in for a cold blue. And she's like, what's the problem? It's like, Dr. Kirk slept with his wife's sister. And now he's reconsidering his commitment choices. And she just rolls her eyes and cuddles a therapy chimp. We then cut to Homer asleep at the station.
Oh, so happy for Homer.
Oh, it's so great, yeah.
Perfect job.
Perfect job for him, yeah. It looks just like the station at the nuclear really power plant.
Like smart how they did that.
Yeah. So we assume it is a nuclear power plant. And he's asleep at the station. So we think, oh, he's still slacking off. But then Larry goes up and was like, oh, break's over, back to work. And we see that he's working at a Jumbotron for the Isotope Stadium. He's like, oh, I love my job. Okay, let's get this stadium rocking. So he's like doing all like the announcements, still trying to get people to, you know, get really loud. And as he's preparing, he puts on a top hat, suspenders, and puts on the sirens to be like, make some noise. And we see that he has like a meter for it, it goes up to 50. He's like, oh, come on, you can do better than that. Better get out the rally ferret. It says emergency use only, and it's just a ferret just screaming, it's rally time, and starts to go over 100, and he starts to like get really nervous, be like, oh my god, is it going to go past 100? Then it calms down, and he's like, okay, maybe mankind was ever meant to go over 100.
In all seriousness though,
yeah,
if that's your job, that must be like the best job in the world.
Super
if
fun.
If you're doing that for like your team.
Because you're only dealing with happy people. Like, yeah. There's going to be no one miserable in that job.
And because it's going to eventually be seamless to you, you're just watching your team for free.
Yeah, yeah.
You're getting paid to watch your favourite team and do all the buttons.
Very true, yeah. You get to see how they're doing. You get to participate in a fun way, but not in a way that you have any actual responsibilities.
Yeah.
You know, like what you're doing doesn't affect who ends up winning the game.
Yeah.
That would be a really fun job, yeah, totally. We then cut to him at Moe's, and he has like a really small little like glass of beer. He's like, well, that's my daily 8 ounces of light beer. Thirst quenched. Better head home. And then Carol's like, just once I'd like to see Homer Simpson get drunk. Oh, well. And then my favorite detail of the episode is Skinner arrives in. He just has the perfect life because of Bart not existing. He arrives in, he has arms locked with like Miss Springfield, some gorgeous woman who obviously won some pageant recently. And Moe's like, oh, better open up a new keg for the happiest man in Springfield. What's your secret? He's like, a rewarding job with a school full of obedient children. Not one troublemaker in the bunch. And Miss Springfield's like, I'm all the trouble he needs. And he throws back a glass of whiskey and throws it at the jukebox. And a song called The Little Shuffle by the Boz Scag starts playing, which ends up being like his anthem for the episode to convey how cool and laid back he is. It's actually a really good song. I'd recommend giving it a listen. It's actually really catchy. It's called The Lido Shuffle, LIDO, by the Boz Scags. You can find it on Spotify. We then cut to the family all eating ice cream in the car. They surprise Marge after work. And Lisa has her Malibu Stacey dolls with her. And she's like, ice cream part of Malibu Stacey wanted some too. And she spills ice cream on her. He's like, oh no, no, no. And a hooded figure passes them. And Homer accidentally knocks him over. The guy takes the hood off. We see it's Bart. And Homer's like, where are your parents? What's your name? He's like, I'm Bart something. Who the hell are you? We cut to them at the Springfield General Hospital. And I was immediately happy to see Bart. Because I was intrigued by the plot line of this episode. But when I saw that it was called Bartless, I was like, oh, we've had such a little Bart already this season. We're going to have an episode dedicated to Bart not being around.
Yeah.
So I was happy they actually was quite heavily involved in the episode in a very creative way. We got them at the Springfield General Hospital. Did a great sign just saying, organ donors die free. And Dr. Haber confirms that he can't remember anything. Barrett can't remember anything before the accident.
Well, you can't remember anything before the accident.
Sorry, I got nothing.
Well, have you ever had amnesia before?
No way I'd forget something like that.
Wiggum says that he'll have to take him down to the station. It's like, I hope you're a true crime buff, because we got this guy staying across the way from you who's going to be huge on Dateline. And Mary says he can stay with them. I'm like, oh, poor thing. He must be so scared. And Barrett, we see Barrett's made on an x-ray of his butt and hands out to all of them. It's like, x-ray for you, x-ray for you, two for the lady. We cut them going to the house, and Barrett's like, oh, check out the rich. And he says that they have, Homer says they're not rich, they just have decent jobs, and this is all came together through careful planning. And Barrett pretends to fall asleep as he's telling him that, and Homer's like, fake snoring to imply we're boring. Well, two can play at that. And he just actually falls asleep. And Bart's like, can we admit I won this? One of my favorite parts. We then cut to him jumping on his new bed. And Marge's just looking at him. And Bart's like, what are you waiting for? This ain't over anytime soon. We cut to Bart going to Lisa. And he's like, oh, the cheap bed in my room broke for some reason. What are you doing? She's like, oh, Malibu Stacy is going to the mall. It's so fun. All of her like Stacy dolls are in their original packaging, and Barrett urges her to take them out of their box so they can crush it with rocks and burn their hair. Lisa's like, no, they need to be perfect. I might have a little OCD. Barrett's like, ADHD, nice to meet you. So great. The first time they've ever mentioned the possibility of either of them having those two things, but like they clearly
makes
do.
So much sense.
Yeah, Lisa definitely has OCD, and Barrett has ADHD. It makes perfect sense. Yeah, they shake hands, and Lisa immediately sanitizes. We cut to the same montage again, but with Barrett involved in it. So it's Marge and Homer dancing into the shower, but you see that Barrett has made the shower into a swimming pool for himself. Lisa wakes up to him jumping on her bed, and he breaks it. He creates a slingshot and starts flinging Maggie's used diapers outside. We cut to Skinner driving in like a lovely car with the window down, with his girlfriend, and he's like, nothing like a morning drive with the top down, the Buzzcocks playing on the radio, life is tight, and the diapers fling at him. And he's immediately like, oh my god, my cool, it's gone. The girl just goes, goodbye, Seymour. And Bart does a little, like, evil, maniacal laugh. I just love it. It's like, he's so cool and laid back as long as Bart isn't around, basically. So as soon as he comes back, he's just, like, tight and wound up again. We then cut to him having cereal at breakfast time. He's making bubbles with his cereal. And Maggie just loves it. And Homer's like, no, Maggie, bubble boy bad. Lisa gets stressed out because Marge never wrote an inspirational message on Lisa's lunchbox, and she makes one herself. She's like, what did I say? The world would be great today because you're in it. Oh, that's great. And then Bart writes, eat my shorts. And Marge is like, what would it actually mean if someone ate your shorts? Like, that's just a thing I say to remind people that I'm the boss. And Lisa's like, do you remember anything about yourself, low maintenance guest? I'm like, oh, I know as much about myself as you guys do. Which is, just takes like a Buzz Cola drink, burps out, I rule. He starts chasing Lisa, burping at her. And then Marge goes, I know he's just a kid in need, but I don't like him. And Bart goes back in, being like, I'm gonna play pickleball. As grabs a jar of pickles and starts flinging it out at the Springfield sign. And Homer's like, I bet his parents don't even like him. Who could? We then cut to Homer taking Bart to a baseball game. Bart's like, whoa, thousands of drunk dads and their bored kids, and you have them all under your control. And Homer's like, it's not as simple as that. There's a lot of strict rules. And then Bart just types, make some babies. And the noise completely drops in confusion. Homer's really stressed out. But then they start laughing. And it goes up to 95. And Homer's like, what have you done? And by all means, keep doing it. He changes the kiss cam to a punch cam. And people start punching each other. And he goes, everybody drop your pants. And that makes them all laugh. And it goes over 100, finally. And he's like, wait, 100? That's the most noise that there can ever be. People start flinging their pants up into the air. He tells him that he showed this traditionalist Jumbotron operator that there's still magic to be found in this machine. He's like, you're all right, Bart. You're easily won over. He gives Bart his suspenders. And they start playing like a baseball version of the theme song, which I thought was really fun and creative. And again, just like letting Hans Zimmer do something really cool and creative.
Exactly.
Which, yeah, just so awesome. I love hearing the music, like, Because it has Alf Clausen worked for the show for the first 27 years, I think, and he was obviously did an amazing job. But it's just so fun hearing like more creative stuff happening with the music since Hans Zimmer took over. It's so cool, but also fun knowing that it's him because, you know...
Subtle as well.
Yeah, very well done. But it's just like I'm used to hearing Hans Zimmer and I associate like, you know, Christopher Nolan movies, Inception. Yeah. I assume he worked on Oppenheimer.
Yeah, it's just nice to hear like...
Him just having fun.
Yeah, and not trying to like steal the show.
He's not. It's done in a subtle, very well done way. Like even the theme song being done here in a baseball way was very subtle and it suited the scene in the moment perfectly, which is so cool knowing that it's him. We then cut back to what is called the Springfield Shondaland Animal Hospital. Shondaland being the studio that made Grey's Anatomy, so that's obviously the reference there. We see Marge storming in furious. And the nurse comes up to her being like, "Did you hear? The man we thought was Dr. Gray was actually his murderous twin. And last night he proposed." And she takes out a ring. And she's like, "Not today, Tracy." We see the waiting room is full of patients who hadn't been taken care of. And she's like, "Where's my staff?" She goes into another room and sees that there's a maternity reveal party going on. And one of the nurses is like, "Time to find out which of my three lovers is the father of my child." And she storms in. She's like, "No more sex, no more intrigue, and the next person who reveals something is fired. Now get to work or eat my shorts." And they all get shocked by that. And one of the doctors is like,
"We'll be much more professional, ma'am.
Maybe the sex closet could be a supply closet?
And the sex mobile could be an ambulance.
Eat my shorts. Still don't know what it means, but it really works."
We then see the Lisa, we come back to the house, we see Lisa is doing a diorama on homework. And Bart's like, "It's Friday night, live a little." And he puts on Itchy and Scratchy for her. And she's like, "Oh, I've seen the lunchboxes, not for me." And she's like, "Oh no, you'll love it. It's about a cat and a mouse trying to kill each other. The human experience." And we then cut to an Itchy and Scratchy cartoon. First time having an Itchy and Scratchy cartoon in ages.
Oh yeah.
Super long time. So fun to get to cover this now.
And it was the right time to do it.
It was actually perfect. It made sense for exactly for the moment and what was going on. So this one was called The Great British Slaying Show. And we see it's obviously at the Great British Bake Off. Itchy and Scratchy have to make a Piccadilly Jubilee pepper snickety cake. Just like the most British sounding thing ever. We see Scratchy makes a perfect cake, but Itchy's struggling with the oven, and Scratchy goes up and helps him, and obviously Itchy throws him in and puts in super yeast down his throat and turns the oven on and turns Scratchy into a cake, and also cracks his eyes like they're eggs and throws that into the cake. And all the mice taste it, and they love it, and rewards him the star baker badge, and of course, Bart and Lisa are in absolute stitches at this. And Marge is like, "I've never heard Lisa make that laugh before." I was like, "Well, I've heard her laugh, but it's always been sarcastic or a quick one out of politeness, but dubiously put upon. Once again, cartoon violence and mental health go hand in hand." We didn't cut to the next morning. Homer asks them how late they stayed up watching cartoons. And Lisa's like, "I don't know, but the ads were all about single women who wanted to meet us." Wanted to meet us right now. Which is relatable to you. You remember staying up late, just like watching cartoons, and like the weird ads start coming on in between, like, I don't know, Dexter's Laboratory or the Powerpuff Girls and stuff. That's when you know you're up late, when the ads that weren't on during the day.
I used to watch, sometimes go on like the adult stations, where it was just like the chat lines.
Oh yeah. I have a whole bit about that.
Naked girls laying on the beds like talking to
them. I have a whole bit about the baby station ladies. I also went on it. You're always convinced that if you stay on it for a while they'd eventually take their clothes off.
It was
never gonna happen. I convinced myself that, like, yo, because they were there for hours.
I
would convince myself if I kept watching, like, they eventually would, because they get so bored that they would just start taking their clothes off, which makes no fucking sense. Like, I've never been like, "Oh, it's really dull today, I'll just take my shirt off." Yeah. Like, it made no sense whatsoever. Yeah, and I was always going to say, if you sit on later, eventually, like, proper porn would come on, which, again, wasn't going to happen because it wasn't paid for.
Yeah.
You know? Ridiculous. Oh, yeah, and they see Maggie is laughing at her book. The book is Everyone Loves Their Job, the same book that Bart was reading to that girl earlier. And Marge is confused because she never liked that book before. And Bart's like, "Oh, I spiced up for her." And we see that he drew Maggie into the book as a monster. It's like, oh, you put her into the story. That's so sweet. The rest like, nah, I just wanted to deface the book. It's like, Homer's like, oh, sure you did. And then Wickham comes in, again, one of my favorite bits. He just bursts the door open. And Homer's like, why did you tear our door down? Like, no, we do that for everybody now. He's like, good news, Bart is leaving you forever. It's like, oh, you found out who his parents are? Like, no, but the Robe and Gabble guy said to put him into the Springfield Maximum Security Orphanage. It used to be a prison, but don't worry, none of the old guards lost their jobs. Bart tells him not to worry because he knew that this was a short gig and he always will have something to remember them by. And we see that he took Homer's wallet, and Homer very sweetly just goes, "Why, you little," and gives him a hug.
Sweet, very
sweet. Yeah, really well done. And he says to Lisa,
"Adios, losers. Next time you see a mouse kill a cat in a way you never thought possible, think of me. I will."
And he goes off with Wiggum, and Marge and Homer run for him. They're like, "We like you. God help us, we like you. We like you so much." And they drive off and they fall to the floor, beginning to cry. And as a storm forms, they start holding each other, and we cut them in their own bed in the real Simpsons universe, or in the real world now, still holding each other. And it's not quite implied, but I guess it's like, I don't know, they had the same dream, or they went to the same, all the universe together. It's not really explained, but it doesn't matter. It was a fun thing, experimental thing to do. It doesn't matter how Marge and Homer actually experienced that. But they run into Bart, and they're immediately relieved that he's still there, and in his room, they start hugging him. And it's like, "We just couldn't wait to tell you something, son. We like you. We just realized." And Bart's like, "Oh, I like you guys too. Wait, what do you mean you just realized?" And then we get our final little tag where the episode concludes. We see Wiggum is looking up the door of that little door that Ralph created early on in the episode. Which is so cool that they went back that, because it happened very subtly. Like, you could have missed it. So that guy was like four people who saw that happening, basically. He's looking up the door, he's being like, "Come down, Ralphie, just put down the purple crayon." We see Willy's Hoover, he's like, "Willy's claws on the five." And like, yeah, I heard you the first time. Like, okay, don't draw a boat, don't get in the boat. Ralphie, you don't know where the river takes you. Ralphie! That concludes the episode. Yeah, I thought this episode was wonderful. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, fantastic. I agree.
I just thought it was such a creative idea for an episode, and they just got it spot on.
Totally.
It was just very seamless, and again, they did one of those things where it's like set in an alternate universe.
Mm-hmm.
But they did it so well this time. I've not always been a fan of it, but this time I was a big fan.
Yeah.
It was a great story. It was a very sweet story, because the whole time it was basically just like a what if.
Yeah,
did exist, and for a lot of it, you're like, "Wow, everything's so much better."
Mm.
But then they start to get very like, you when you start to read between the lines, you're like, "Oh, actually, everything isn't better.
Something's missing."
Yeah, because their life, materialistic wise, is better, but it's not as interesting.
It's too perfect. Yeah, exactly.
A little detail I liked was how good Principal Skinner's life.
Yeah, so good.
Perfect for
you. Yeah. His one, to be fair, isn't like, because imagine Homer, it is like, okay, their life is perfect, but something's missing. But Skinner's one was actually just ideal.
Yeah.
his job is great. Like, Bart does ruin his life.
Yeah.
Still, I love
somehow
that.
In this alternate universe, he ruins his life.
Yeah, so good.
And I thought it was actually, for the first time in a while, I never talk about the good endings.
Them being rushed.
Like, I always talk about endings being rushed.
Yeah.
And even if a lot of these episodes in this season had good endings, but I've not really like noticed it. It's just because it's seamless.
Yeah.
This was
the
first time I was like, that rounded off really well.
Yeah.
And
that it was impactful.
A really nice way to end it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it didn't end perfectly in the alternate universe, because it's like, oh, well, Bart's still gone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But then, yeah. So I really, really like this episode, because it was such a good balance as well of humour and
some
being
emotional dramatic
as well.
Bits.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, I thought so too.
Eight.
Fair enough. Like, I gave it an 8.5. Pretty much everything you just said too. I thought it was wonderful. Good point, actually, you mentioned there. I didn't even think about that. Like, yeah, in this alternate universe, Barry is still gone, and they're just stuck with their kind of perfect, but like you said, boring life forever. But I guess the one positive thing is that, like, him being there briefly did change
things. It taught
them
something.
Yeah, like Marge sticking up for herself at work and Homer being more creative in the Jumbotron and Lisa, you know, colouring outside the lines, so to speak, and Maggie drawing in the book. You know, he did do something for them to make their lives a little bit more colourful. But now he's gone forever. So it is kind of sad, but it's super interesting.
I'm glad
It
wasn't, perfect ending for them.
Yeah, it would be kind of boring if it was like, oh, they get to adopt Barry. It's kind of better, this kind of this tragic ending. But then we get to be happy because the version of The Simpsons of course, have Barry. And we get to kind of appreciate him more as a character. And I thought that this episode felt like such a love letter to Barry.
Definitely.
Because he's such a great character. I mean, Barry Simpson is one of my favorite original characters of all time, obviously. But I will say that my biggest critique of the more recent seasons has been that he's definitely less Bart than there was. There's still a lot of Bart. I feel when you go back to like seasons like, oh, even at the very beginning, there was Bart episodes more so than there was Homer episodes. Whereas now Homer is way, way more common. I'm fine with that, but I would love to see a bit more Bart. So to get one here, it's ironic that an episode called Bartlett's is actually one of the most Bart-heavy episodes in a while.
Yeah.
And it was just so well done. Like I said, it's a very unique episode and a solid, like a very fresh take on the character of Bart, because we obviously see him as this troublemaker and this delinquent so much, which he is, but seeing him not from the perspective of being Marge and Homer's son, it didn't make you see what is charming, what's lovable about that in a really cool way. And this seeing what makes him charming. It was dark, but also sweet, the way they did it. Very well done. And like you said, they had a great balance of, like, it was a bit more dramatic than your typical Simpsons episode. There was some really heartwarming moments, but it was still super funny.
Yeah.
I was noticing when I was making my notes for this, my second time watching it, when Chief Wiggum comes in, and when he leaves, that whole scene is only a minute long. 1845 to 1945 is the time frame.
Really?
And there's so much jokes crammed into that 1 minute. You know, like him bursting the door open, being like, oh, we do this all the time now. And didn't talk about the Springfield Maximum Security Orphanage and Bart saying goodbye and everything. Oh, that whole scene was so tight, only a minute long. I was like, what a masterclass in comedy writing. How much jokes they fit into that 1 minute. But it's still heartwarming. Mm. Like the way he says goodbye to them and stuff. And Homer saying, why are you little and everything. Just so well done. And exactly what I just said. It was a love letter to the character of Bart and just why he is so great and why the show would not be half as interesting without him.
I think we really needed this episode.
We did, It was a solid, just proper Bart episode. He was utilized so perfectly, and I just liked seeing him as this. It was like he was just born to be cheeky. He can't remember anything, but he still just can't help but just be cheeky and cause trouble and mayhem. Like, so yeah, just such a well done episode. Yeah, cool. Let's jump into the news.
Live from London City, it's a very bad but slightly improved impression of Kemp Brockman here to let you know it's time for Simpsons News.
Can we do a new intro for Dylan's News?
Yes, sure.
Dylan's News. Dylan Simpson News. Dylan Simpson's News. Dylan Simpson's News.
At first I thought you were doing Take On Me. Dylan's
News. I can sing better than that. I just have a cold.
Dylan's News. It's not even the name of the fucking... It's Simpsons News. Time for Simpsons News.
Dylan's doing the Simpsons News.
Oh, is it like, are you trying to do a Simpsons theme song? Not gonna lie, I didn't know. I know, you got a bit of a smooth caramel going today. I think it works for you.
That's good. Yeah. You should definitely stick with that intro.
100%, man. Every single episode from now on, don't worry. Season 35 is confirmed to premiere October 1st.
Oh, right, okay.
So we still have a lot of time to catch up, October 1st. These are something that were revealed at Comic-Con. The Simpsons teased the 34th Treehouse of Horror with a poster. You can find the poster on their Instagram page, and it looks fantastic. I'm very excited. This one will feature a Silence of the Lambs parody.
Nice.
With Lisa as Clara Starling and Sideshow Bob as Hannibal Lecter.
Cool.
Perfect. You couldn't get better than that. A story about Marge having to fight off multiple NFT mascots and a virus outbreak which causes all of Springfield to turn into Homer.
Okay.
Which sounds fantastic
sounds
to me.
Cool, yeah.
Yeah, that one looks great. It's like this dark smoke and people are coming out of it, and it's like a Homer version of Chief Wiggum and a Homer version of Rainier Wolf Castle. That one's gonna be fantastic. I can't wait. The one that intrigues me the least is the NFT one, but they could do something cool with it.
Marge, it's always Marge with these like
these more out there ones.
Average episodes,
That doesn't mean that they could do a creative thing with it. It's just the Homer virus and
sound a lot more interesting.
The Science of the Lambs sound great, you know. But if they find a fun way to like take on NFTs, I'm totally down for it.
Of course.
And then the third one is also Trials of Horror related. It's Trials of Horror 33, the one that we reviewed recently enough, has been nominated for the Best Animated Program Award at the Emmys, up against Bob's Burgers, The Plight Before Christmas, Primal's Shadow of Fate, which is an Adult Swim show, the Netflix show Intergalactic's episode Mad Solar, and Rick and Morty's Night Family.
Mm-hmm.
The only episode I've seen of the ones that's up against is Night Family. I think, in terms of animation and just everything, like story quality, writing, that Trials of Horror is fantastic.
Amazing, yeah.
So I think it has a very good chance
it
of winning.
It could easily win, yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, you have the Death Note parody and you also have the Simpsons world, which are both stunning in terms of even just animation, but also very well written. The performances are great in all of them, you know, like because Best Animated Program is like everything, you
I
know.
Think they could well I wouldn't be surprised at all if Simpsons won.
I'm rooting for them. I'm surprised. Have you seen the new season of Rick and Morty?
No.
There's some great episodes in that season. Night Family, to me, is one of the more average ones. I'm surprised that was the one they chose.
Interesting.
I think if they chose... Night Family is like the beginning of the season. I think if they chose like a later episode of Rick and Morty, season 6, it could have a chance against Trials of Horror, but Night Family, I wouldn't... doesn't hold a candle to Trials of Horror 33, in my opinion.
I think I stopped watching obviously. Rick and Morty after season 3.
Really? Oh, it's great.
Yeah, I don't know. I sort of lost interest in it.
Sure. I mean, I'm sure some people listening now would be like, oh, good for Sebastian because it's Justin Roiland. But it's still a great show. It's well written. Season 6, I think, is the show's best season in years. I will say it took a dip in season 3, so I understand why you might have stopped there. It goes up in season 4. Season 5 is even better. And season 6, I think they kind of figured it out.
Oh, okay.
You know, but I personally think it's worth getting back to. It's all on Netflix. But yeah, let's jump on to Seb's Classics.
Homer Badman.
Can we talk about the messages between me and you?
Yeah, go on then.
So, yeah. Whenever...
I'm just a bit clueless.
Sebastian always messages me what the Seb's Classics is going to be. If we have time.
Oh, we spoiled it.
Yeah, I know. Behind the scenes. If we have time, we'll watch it together. If we're doing a podcast where we have somewhere to be kind of that evening, we'll watch it separately and, you know, just cover it together here. But when he said Homer Badman, I was like, oh, such a great episode, such an underrated episode. And it makes that episode is even more relevant today than it was when it came out.
Yeah, for sure.
And Sebastian just went, ? And I went, you know, the way everyone gangs up trying to cancel him. And he goes, who? Homer? And I went, do you even watch the episode? You have watched it, right?
Yes. I
you know what I'm talking about,
I know
surely.
Exactly what you're talking about when they're outside picketing, but like, I...
And the way they were all just so quick to be like, they see one video out of context and immediately you're like, oh!
I just wasn't thinking
he did a
straight.
Bad thing. And but at the end, it's so crazy because this episode came out in, I guess, if it was season 6, it would have been 1995. Do you know the bit at the end where Marge is like, I guess as long as everybody's filming everything, justice will always be served. I doubt that was happening that much in 95, but that's so relevant today.
So relevant.
People are being recorded all the time. You know what I mean? Such a good episode.
I'm not gonna lie,
I love it.
I think when you messaged me, I hadn't had my coffee yet.
There we go. Yeah. Absolutely brainless.
So do not message me before I have my coffee.
Sorry about that.
I just don't think straight about my coffee.
Lesson learned. Every time I message you from now on, I'll be like, Have you had your coffee yet? Sebastian has a giant mug of Darth Vader and it says, come to the dark side, we have coffee.
The best
meme. But yeah, I think this is fantastic.
So good, man. And it is so relevant today. I love, like,
incredibly.
It's very indirect.
It's season 6. So ahead of its time.
I love the indirect jokes. One of them was like, it's when they're on that TV panel And that woman's crying. She's like, I didn't even know him or ever spoken to him.
Yeah, I have no and context. She's like,
your tears say more than...
the context it? Ever would.
Yeah.
That's so good.
And this
everyone has a sob story.
This isn't us, like, disregarding...
No, of like course, cancel culture has some merit and some people deserve to be cancelled, but, you know, it is one of those things that has gone so far that sometimes people are being put in the same bracket as, like, the worst people on the planet when, like, context is everything. And, like, obviously what happens with Homer in this episode is a gigantic misunderstanding, and Homer is being an idiot, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's done so well.
I don't want to get, like, too much, because I'm sure there's loads of podcasts where people are talking about cancel culture and everything, but
yeah,
it is like we always say about like how annoying it is when people just don't watch stuff because someone in it did something bad a long time ago, and it's like I always
not
say
not even if they don't watch it but they say they don't like it,
especially that,
but it's a very, it doesn't sound like they're giving their actual opinion, they're just giving a safe opinion. Do you know, like someone being like, oh, American Beauty is such a shit film because Kevin Spacey is a monster. Like,
I always say,
well, House Kevin Spacey is a monster, but American Beauty is a great movie and he's a good actor, you know?
Yeah.
100%.
I think maybe American Beauty, especially, people say it because he's kind of creepy in that
film. In that movie, of course. It'd be a hard one to watch.
It is very annoying because it's like. And then it's even stuff like I Say Ricky Gervais, like. People
and because he made one unflattering joke, I should now say The Office is a shit show and I hate extras.
It's not even like the joke he said was illegal.
No, of course not.
It's just a joke that to some people goes too far.
Yeah. You're entitled to your opinion, but just don't watch it.
Yeah.
People are dying. There's wars happening in the world. Like, I don't think there's a point in concerning ourselves about jokes we don't like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because comedians gotta try shit. Like, it's a medium where, you know, you obviously can write and rewrite all the time, but you do need to tell it in front of people in order to find out if it works or not. And sometimes that can go the wrong way, you know? Bill Burr made a great point about that, is like, it's what happens in the room in the moment is very different to...
Yeah, what you see online or...
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, it'd be like... Because you know, sometimes comedians' jokes are being taken and being put on the morning news, and Bill Burr goes, that'd be like taking a stripper's set from a strip club and point that in the morning news. Like, the context is just too different, you know? It's very, very true. But anyway, we're getting sidetracked. But of course, this is what the episode opens up a conversation to.
Yeah.
I think part of what makes it so good is that it was actually written before any of these things really started happening, which it makes the conflict in it so not biased, you know? And that's what makes it so fresh and well written. And it's also just so funny. Like when he goes onto that news channel, that rock bottom place, it's clearly like a parody of Fox News. And he thinks that show's going to like make him finally look good. And he can finally make him get his chance to say his side of the story. And they just like take everything out of context. It's so poorly edited. and the guy is just like, Homer, please don't take your anger out on me. It's just a still of his face. Like, no, Homer Simpson, no.
My favorite is
so good.
Is they're watching that show and it's like basically meant to be like about what Homer did.
Yeah.
And it's just that guy looks nothing like Homer, and he's like driving the car.
Yeah.
And then he's like,
it's like a well shot movie.
There's a cat, and he's like, I don't care, and he runs the cat. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a living creature, Homer Simpson. I don't care. Rolls it over just to make it look as unflattering as possible. And he's like, Homer Simpson, you can't sexually harass me. Like, yes, I can. We're in America. We have a male president. Ridiculous. Yeah, it is such a funny episode. The whole thing's at the beginning when they go to that candy like convention is so great as well, and he's looking at the gummy, the Milo, and this like this art curator is like, oh yes, it is the gummy Vilis de Milo made by people who only work exclusively in gummy, and Mara just goes, stop saying gummy. So good. The bit at the end is great too, when like it's such a stupid like Deus Ex Machina, but it's done in a really funny way. Like Willy was videotaping everything around Springfield, and so we had footage to show that like Homer wasn't grabbing the babysitter's ass, he just found the gummy the Milo and was grabbing that.
Yeah.
And then they broadcast at the end on that rock bottom thing again, being like, you know, a creepy Scotsman going around Springfield, filming everybody. And Homer's like, oh my god, that guy's a creep. Like, Homer, he saved your life. It's like, but the TV says he's bad. It's like, shouldn't this have told you not to listen to the TV? And the family leaves, he just hugs the TV. It's like, let's never fight again. It's just done so well. Because when you think about the end, then it's like, the whole episode kind of was Homer going against TV, which is like, one of his greatest loves.
it reminded me recently, there's this guy on TikTok, and he's like the biggest news source on TikTok. But he does everything from his room.
Wow, like, the biggest news source.
Literally, he has like 10 million followers now on TikTok.
Yes,
he basically, all he does is just report news from his room.
Cool.
But people love it because it's like so true and unbiased.
And it's quick and digestible. It's quick,
yeah.
It's yeah. Like, that's the thing, is like, my dad, we have a TV channel called RTE in Ireland. My dad will watch the 6 o'clock news and the 9 o'clock news. So he watches 2 hours of news a day. I don't fucking got time for that. There's 24 hours in a day.
Yeah.
Why would I want that?
It's
such an old-fashioned way of consuming media.
Yeah, it's, but like, it's good. And he put out a video the other day saying like, oh, I was interviewed. I think it was ITV. He was like, I was interviewed by ITV News, and like, look at how they made me look. And like, and he was saying like the whole process, everyone was like super nice to him, like, oh, you're such a great guy, blah blah blah. And then when it actually went online, he just made him look ridiculous, like, oh, young man from his bedroom,
because
trying to talk about these subjects.
Yeah, you know, like, makes sense, because they see him as like being a threat to their business, so they used this biased way of reporting on him to make him look bad. Yeah, and he says, Russell Brand did a really great video about that I'd recommend watching. Just look up Russell Brand, Fox News, and MSNBC, and that'll be the first thing that comes up. But basically, it's like, we see Fox News and all of these, like, Republican, like, right, alt-right news channels as being, like, very biased, which they absolutely are. But the liberal channels are also very biased.
Yeah,
they just cover it up in a smarter way, in a less transparent way.
And then it makes people who are more liberal be like, oh, well, this is the unbiased. And then the people that are less liberal are like, oh, no, but this is the unbiased. But it's not, they're
both biased.
Are biased,
yeah.
It's
totally.
Just because one leans towards your views, you think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, everything is biased. Every news source is biased.
It is, yeah.
It's very hard to find a non-biased news source.
Very,
everyone
very
has their own beliefs.
Yeah, and like, you can try your best to not put your opinions on the things, but it's always going to make its way in there because we're human beings. You know, I mean, we can't think objectively. Like, we're not robots.
We're not AI. We know who owns these news sources and newspapers, so obviously, you know, whatever their views are,
100%, yeah. Russell Brand gets into it in a very interesting way in that video of, like, that MSNBC doesn't report on the Ukraine war too heavily because Joe Biden doesn't want to send any missiles out to the Ukraine because, you know, there's all these, like, interesting things. I won't get into too much. I'm not too well read on the subject, but he is, and I'd highly recommend watching it.
I will, because,
well worth
to be honest, man, like, a few years ago, if you asked me what I thought of Russell Brand, I'd be like, oh, twat, blah, blah, blah. I think he's great,
His
man.
Videos, his are great.
I'm a Russell Brand fan.
Oh, he's fantastic, yeah. And, look, I'm sure, obviously, he's, like, going to be in some way biased because it's impossible not to, but he does do a very good way of trying to be as objective as he can about what he's reporting on.
And he's,
I mean,
it's always for the sole, like, purpose of serving the people as well.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
The truth.
100%, yeah. And as long as that's your objective, that's a good objective to have, whereas sometimes these news channels, that clearly isn't their objective. They want you to have a certain viewpoint, you know? Yeah, super interesting. Anyway, back to the episode.
But it's a great episode.
Yeah. There's one last bit before very current. That's why all these recent things are popping up. It's just such a crazy topical episode that came out in 1995, and it still holds up so much today, nearly 20 years later. Is a testament to that. Nearly 30 years later, should I say, is an absolute testament to that. But yeah, there's one more bit before we wrap up this cover of the episode. I love the bit where he's like giving his apology on public access TV, and he's like, you know, I may be a bad guy, I've done some bad things, but I didn't do that. Although I have done some bad things. Like this one time I saw this guy riding one of those classic bicycles, you know, with like the massive wheel, and I was like, oh, that's not happening. So I grabbed this massive chunk of granite, and I was like, Homer, stop. And then later on in the episode, the doorbell rings, it's just some guy in one of those massive bikes, and it's the wise guy, like, hey, this is what you say about my bike, and just kicks him. So good. But yeah, I think it's a wonderful episode. I give it a 9.
I would give it a 9 as well.
9, yeah. Great episode. I think it's underlooked because season 6 is just so fantastic. And it's not the best of season 6, but it's
so incredibly consistent. Great. Yeah.
Incredibly consistent, super funny, while also being topical in a very great way of addressing something that will always be topical. Like, I don't think this thing will ever completely go away. Hopefully it can get better, but it's going to be somewhere out there, which will make this episode always just fantastic. But yeah, moving on to who wrote this episode. So the segment, for those of you who can't remember, is a segment I got inspired to do because of the writer's strike, which has now been completely underlooked because of the actors now striking also. But the writer's strike is still happening, people. It's just that actors are louder than writers. So this segment is I give my respects to whoever wrote the episode that we covered, the episode being Bartless, not Homer Badman. So this episode was written by John Frink. So for people who don't know, John Frink has been writing for the show since 1999.
Year of my birth.
Yeah, there you go. That's how long it's been. He has a credit on the Simpsons movie. And contrary to popular belief, he isn't. Professor Frink is not named after him. Because he didn't start writing for the show until season 10. Professor Frink had already been part of the show at that point. It's just a funny coincidence, because it's obviously not a common surname. But yeah, so I'm going to give my top 3 episodes that he's written. I'm going to give an honorable mention, because he has written so many great episodes. He's consistently written, for the past couple of years, 2 episodes a season.
Okay, that's
so cool. Yeah, he's a great writer. And 2 I just want to mention, because there's so many great ones. In season 22, he did 500 Keys, which is an episode where the family finds all these keys, and they separate into 4 separate storylines, trying to find out what these keys open. Very fun, inventive episode. And Angry Dad the Movie, also season 22. Season 22, where they make a movie of Angry Dad, and they go up to the Oscars against all these other different animated movies, and there's so much creative, fun animation in that throughout. Russell Brand and Ricky Gervais are in that episode. It's such a fun, creative, different episode also. He's just a great writer, yeah. So my top 3 episodes he's written. Number 3, my favorite episode of season 33, Pixelita and Afraid. Totally did a great job with that episode. If you want to see how much of that episode, go back to that podcast. Number 2, The Bob Next Door, which is in season 21, which is an episode where this guy moves next door to the Simpsons in the house on the other side, which we never see who lives there. Because obviously we know where Flanders is. We never see who's on the other side. So someone moves there, and Bart suspects that it's Fiso Bob. And just the way that develops is done really well, and just written very well in like a very thriller way. And number 1, I went for Treehouse of Horror 12, which is in season 13. Just 3 fantastic segments in this one. One of my favorites is the one where the gypsy curses Homer and like bad things are happening to all the people that he loves. The one where they get like an AI in the house, and it's voiced by Pierce Brosnan, and falls in love with marriage. Fantastic.
The 2001.
A parody of HAL 9000, obviously. And the Harry Potter one, which is great. WizKids. That one's so good, because that one came out obviously at the real hype of Harry Potter. I think they did so well with that segment. Is they didn't make it like Bart is literally Harry Potter and Lisa's literally Hermione. It's just the setup of them being wizards in the wizarding school, and then their own fun Simpsons thing with it, you know, and Mr. Burns obviously being Voldemort. I just think the 3 great segments. It's just such a solid Treehouse of Horror. There's obviously loads, but I think there's probably a lot more Treehouse of Horrors that have like 1 weak segment, or just one that's weak in comparison to the rest. Like, that's a Treehouse of Horror that is like 3 bangers of a segment. So yeah, John Frink, great writer, deserves all the love. And yeah, let's move on to the questions. Yeah, we got 2.
Nice.
So,
come on, guys, we've been gone for weeks.
I know. I put up 2 questions as well. We only got 2. I guess got to get that audience back. But yeah, we've got 2 good ones. We got 1 proper Simpsons question and 1 like kind of filthy one. Which one would you rather hear first?
The filthy one.
So Jack Tyack, our buddy who was on an episode before, separate from the same planet, he asked, would you bang Miss Krabappel?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's sexy. She's definitely the best looking drink-filled woman.
I think it's the whole teacher thing as well.
Yeah, of course.
I was actually having this discussion
She's a cougar.
Yesterday at the pub about like how you just have different standards for teachers.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't look twice normally if they walk down the street, but because it's a teacher, you're like, oh, she's so hot.
I know, something about that, yeah, that they're they're just really responsible job where you have to
Any teacher below 40 is just hot.
Yeah, totally. Substitute teachers, my goodness. I remember the scene in Flaming Moes where who's the lead singer of Aerosmith again?
I can't remember. I
think it's Steven Tyler. He can't find his drumsticks, and he finds that Mrs. Krabappel has them, and he's like, Mrs. Krabappel, I really need my drumsticks. She's like lying on his bed being like, why'd you come and get him? She's like clicking the drumsticks together. I remember from a very young age finding that scene very hot. So the answer to Jack's question is 100%. She's a good looking cartoon character. And second question, again, great question related to the episode, is this page called Simpsons Gems, which is a page, a fun Instagram page, and basically they just find really fun screen grabs from the show that are very weird out of context. And just, yeah, it's a very fun page, but they asked us, what other Ultimate Simpsons universes would you like to see? It's a very fun question. One that came to mind for me straight away, I know this is kind of similar to the episode we already saw, but it would be very different, is a universe where Marge and Homer had no kids.
Yeah, that would be cool.
You know what I mean? Yeah, because there's
also intentions. I like that this person knew the episode.
Because it's in theme. Because we know that, like, when Marge and Homer first met, they had no intentions of having kids, and Bart was a mistake. It would be fun to see what would have happened, where they have gone, if not for the fact that, you know, Marge got knocked up and they got stuck in Springfield. You know, it'd be fun to see what would they have done if they were just like a young, vibrant couple who never had kids. Yeah, that's one that came to mind for sure.
I would like to see one where Homer is the smart one. Marge is the dumb one.
Ooh, yeah, that'd be fascinating. Yeah, totally. If he's the responsible one, maybe Marge is the one with a dead-end job. Maybe he's like the housewife.
That'd be really cool. Or like still he's working.
The same standards. But yeah. She's dumb, so she's not as good a mom, so maybe the stuff at home isn't being kept on top of as well. Yeah, that'd be cool, definitely. What other ones would you do? Like, maybe if Mr. Burns wasn't rich?
Yeah, but that sort of is his thing. So what would he be if he
was exactly. rich? Yeah, that's why he'd be an interesting episode. Point. What would he be? You know? Or if he was just nice. He was rich but a really nice guy. Like, what would you do with that, you know? That could be interesting. I mean, there's so much you can do. Like, I don't know. Like, if Mo didn't run the bar, like what would he have done instead? Like, man, there's so much.
There is a lot you can do.
Of course, there's so many characters. If Krusty
wasn't a clown,
if he wasn't a TV star, what else would he have done?
For me, yeah, if Marge and Homer's roles were reversed.
Yeah, that'd be so fascinating. I mean, obviously, the most interesting alternate universe to do is The Simpsons, because the family, because they're the main people that we follow. Yeah, I mean, yeah, those are probably the best ones. Yeah, roles reversed, and just if they didn't have kids. You know, like, Marge and Homer is an interesting duo, obviously. Maybe if they died.
Yeah.
If the three kids were orphans, that could be an interesting area to explore.
Yeah, it's dark, but yeah.
Yeah, of course it's there, yeah. But, you know, that's the potential of alternate universes, you know. Yeah, fun question. Yeah, loads of different things you could do with that. But yeah, let's move on to our final segment, recommendation of the week. Let's
pull it up, yeah.
Let's rock, paper, those scissors, baby.
All right. Whoa.
Rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors.
Oh my God.
Rock, paper, scissors.
Oh.
That's the longest one we've had. I know, yeah. I was trying to let him win, but I was not victorious in my pursuits. I got rock and he got scissors. So
they love knowing the details.
They love, man. They're keeping score. They're keeping track. They want to know what ones we pick the most commonly.
Yeah,
you know,
this is a big fan. They got it written down.
There's an Instagram page dedicated to this. Yeah, but yeah, I watched a lot of content since we last did this show, because when I go home to Ireland, I take a break from everything else and I just like catch up on TVs, like relax myself and stuff. But the thing that I watched that really I just loved was Only Murders in the Building.
Oh yeah.
You know of it? No, it's on Disney Plus. It's on Hulu for people in America. It's Steve Martin Short, and Selena Gomez. And it's just such a well-made show. Basically, it's a comedy drama about these people who live in this really nice, like, wealthy building in New York. Someone gets murdered in it, and all three of them are obsessed with true crime podcasts. So they make a podcast about murders, but only murders that happen in their building, basically.
Oh, okay.
And the way it spirals is done so well. It's dramatic, but also they see Martin Short are comedic geniuses, so it's done super well. Yeah, there's two seasons of it. I binge it while I was home. It was fantastic. And season three is coming out next month, so
apparently really looking forward to it. Selena Gomez is like suddenly like really, really rich.
Yeah,
compared to last year, her like net worth went up.
Jeez, maybe like, from that show, maybe no, from like, the music like got popular.
I think she must own some sort of business, because it's like she is fucking rich.
Yeah, yeah, I guess that happens a lot, like when someone has some bit of success, they'll make an investment in something, like more long term, because obviously like residuals are good, but they're not like, they're unpredictable. So yeah, it makes sense. Obviously, whatever investment she made was super good. So yeah, good for her. And she's amazing in the show, I have to say. I will be honest, when I jumped into it, she was the one aspect of it that I was doubtful of, just because I loved Wizard of Waverly Place growing up, but I certainly never saw her as like being an amazing actress.
Yeah.
She is honestly the heart and soul of the show. Really? She's fantastic in it. Steve Martin, Martin Short are fantastic, but they're more so comedic actors. So like Selena Gomez balances out
That's
the more
cool.
dramatic parts of the show in a very well done way. Yeah, it's fantastic. I love seeing Americans. It's just so cool to see him still thriving, doing amazing comedy in his late 70s.
Mm.
You know, I find that really inspiring. And in my... Oh, sorry, no, you can do your recommendation first, sorry.
I mean, it's a bit of a, like, probably not a great recommendation because everyone knows about it.
What,
Barbie? No.
Or Oppenheimer?
But I was thinking that people might have... think that this film is not worth watching.
Okay.
But I was going to say the new Mission Impossible
film. Oh, it's fantastic.
So good, man.
Yeah.
Like,
it's not one of my recs today, but I would recommend
they
it.
They just
it's
get
great.
Better.
It's great.
They just get better.
It's the only franchise I can think of that has actually been consistently better.
It gets
the first
better,
two
yeah.
were eh. The third one is really good, and everyone since then, in my
they,
opinion,
they
has
keep
topped.
Better.
Yeah.
Like, Tom Cruise, like, as much as people like shit on him for his private life, whatever. Like, he's so true
an
to the
entertainer.
Form. He's so true
yeah.
to the form of film. Like,
he is.
He just wants... Like, when Top Gun Maverick comes out of the cinema again, I'm going to see it. I'm going to see it when it gets
re-released. Why would it get re-released?
They're re-releasing it because he's not putting it on any streaming services, because he wants everyone to see it in cinema.
Oh, that's so cool. Okay, I'd see it again. Yeah, totally.
it was a great film.
It was made for cinema, too, as is Dead Reckoning.
And... I saw this film the other day and I was like, wow, they just keep getting better. And
mm-hmm.
it's almost like the perfect action film. It's just everything is there, and you can't, you know, the when he's on the motorcycle when he goes off
amazing
the mountain,
yeah, in Glasgow,
and that's legit.
I know
the whole stunt,
the man
it's
is
just
so
incredible.
Dedicated, yeah,
like, and just watching that and knowing the backstory of the stunt, because I saw the behind the scenes of that before I watched the film, but
mental.
It's just so cool, man.
Mm-hmm.
And it has everything you could want from an action film. So if you just want like pure entertainment, definitely check out Mission Impossible, and check out all the ones before that, because they just get better.
It's such a great series. Yeah, it's so consistent.
Because I feel like it just has a bad reputation, but it's not bad.
It's just because of the assumption
the first few.
Make. The first two aren't great, but I guess also just the name Mission Impossible and the posters.
Yeah.
It looks like a typical action movie, but I guess it is, but in the best way.
In the best way.
And it's not that it has more substance to it. Like, we had this conversation...
Same with John Wick.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, we had this conversation when you were recommending John Wick Chapter 4. Is like, I think action movies are one of the most, like, overdone genres in media, because it's one of those things that you can do the most baseline thing with it and it will make a lot of money. But for that same reason, when someone finds a way to make it fresh and interesting and fun and enjoyable and have you actually care about the characters and the stakes, it's even more refreshing. And I definitely think Mission Impossible is an example of that. For me, actually, it would be the biggest example of that. I love that series. Ethan Hunt's a great character. I care about Ethan Hunt. I care about that whole gang.
Yeah.
Benji, Simon Pegg's character especially, I think he does a great job. He's a great, like, a Q-type character. Yeah, it's just an amazing series. I don't want to give away the ending, but that whole sequence in the train... is
so
flawless.
Cool,
I was stressed
watching. Very stressed.
Like, captivated.
But that's what was really good about the film, is they had so many things going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my favourite scene, personally, was the airport at the beginning.
Yeah, great too. Yeah, like, absolutely.
Just the amount of stress, because you're thinking about so many things at the same
time. Yeah, there's so much happening.
So many
yeah.
different groups of people, but they managed to tie them into the same...
Mm-hmm. So well, thing, so beautifully. Yeah, so well done. I would totally recommend Dead Reckoning also. Do you know what I really respect as well about Dead Reckoning is it's the first of a two-parter, but it wasn't done in such a way like the way like a lot of Marvel movies are, where it's like, oh, you have to see part two. It's kind of, it still has a complete ending. It still feels like its own movie.
I could still live my life and not watch part two.
No, I will. I want to. I'm really looking forward to part two, but it's still its own film. Like, yeah, exactly. You can appreciate it purely on its own. Whereas that's not the case with like the new Spider-Verse movie.
No, exactly.
You need to see part two.
Now,
like, it's not really a complete movie because there is a part two coming. Whereas this was still its own thing, but I'm sure part two is going to be a great expansion to that story. Yeah. My second recommendation was kind of a weird one. While I was home after watching Only Murders in the Building, I was in such a Steve Martin mood. I love Steve Martin, one of my favorite comedians of all time. I just looked up what else he had on Disney Plus. I found this movie called The Big Year, which I'd heard of it. I'd never really taken much notice of it because it looked like a very typical comedy to me. The poster is like him, Jack Black, and Owen Wilson. So obviously you see those three stars, you assume a pretty goofy comedy. And they're all like, they all have binoculars and they're like looking in different areas. And they look like a silly comedy to me. But I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm in like a mood for a silly comedy. I'm going to throw it on. And the trailers and the poster of that movie are so misleading. It's not that at all. It's actually a really well done comedy drama, actually probably more so dramatic. It's really beautiful, and it's so unfortunate, like, this is such a not known movie. It bombed when it came out financially, like, it didn't make back its budget. It's really good. It essentially, Owen Wilson, Jack Black, and Steve Martin are all bird watchers, and they want to do this thing called a big year, where they basically try to see as many birds as they can, which obviously means that they have to go around different parts of the world to do it. So obviously you can imagine from that the budget was quite big, but it's done so well. Like, bird watching is obviously such a simple kind of silly hobby, but it's used in the movie as a really beautiful metaphor of just like having a passion that some people see as really silly. But if you love this thing and you're passionate about it, then you shouldn't care what other people think and just pursue this thing that you love doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's done such a simple, pure way in this movie because it's a simple thing of watching birds. It does so well, but it gets deeper because all three of them have these like real life responsibilities that they have to deal with also, that they're getting distracted from because they're so obsessed with bird watching. But it's done so well. Like, I connected with it because, you know, when you find a passion that involves you having to leave where you're from, you leave behind the people you love most, and you sacrifice losing that personal time with people you care about in order to pursue something that most people see as being kind of crazy or ambitious or stupid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I connected with it. I didn't expect to connect so hard to a movie about Jack Black, Owen Wilson, and Steve Martin watching birds. But honestly, it's just done in such a really beautiful, well-known way. Well-done way. Not well-known at all. It came out in 2011, and like, the film has garnered no attention, and I really think it deserves it. And I'm hoping that movie could have a renaissance someday. It deserves one. Great, great film. I highly recommend. Yeah.
Sounds cool, man.
Some of the best performances I've seen from all three of them as well. I think all three of them are great comedic actors. I haven't seen too much dramatic work from any of the three of them. So,
yeah.
They all do really beautiful work in it, yeah. Yeah, any recommendations from you?
Yeah, you got me thinking about Russell Brand.
Cool.
So I was going to recommend his Joe Rogan episode.
No, not Bedtime Stories. The Adam Sandler movie. I do love Bedtime Stories. The Joe Rogan episode that he's in.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
The most recent one. It's
that must be some differences of opinions there.
Surprisingly not.
No? Okay.
Yeah. People seem to have this like thing of Joe Rogan being like some Trump right wing,
which he's not.
Like,
I know he's not. But
and he's a very open minded guy as well.
As is Russell Brand, so I'm sure when they do have this
agreement, so
they're both cordial about it.
They hear
it.
Each other out.
Of course.
It's nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's super interesting. It's the best kind of. It's what makes the Joe Rogan podcast so good, because it's like
he brings
always
on
changing
different
the subjects.
Yeah, totally.
And it's about pretty random stuff, but it's always so interesting. And
yeah,
some of the stuff like Russell Brand says. I mean, if you. you might be a bit depressed afterwards because it's like the sad truth about stuff.
But right.
Like it's so relevant and like it opens your eyes a lot.
Nice.
To what's going on. So
yeah.
Yeah, I recommend that.
That's one I've been meaning to listen to as well. So yeah, I must catch up. I mean, there's loads of Joe Rogans I'm meaning to listen to because
sometimes you're like, oh, well, I want. Like
I want an hour long like silly podcast, which obviously Joe Rogan isn't.
But then you can stick on like the one that Theo Von was on the other day, and it's like it's gonna be funny.
Yeah, true. You get a mix of stuff. Like Duncan Trussell has done a bunch of Joe Rogan's recently to catch up. And I love the two of them together. There's loads I need to catch up on for sure. But yeah, I think we'll leave you guys having caught up on this. Thank you guys as always for listening. Sorry we're gone for so long. Promise there won't be. As big a break as that was for a while, hopefully.
Yeah.
There shouldn't be, because that was just like a crazy whole bunch of things happening to me all at once. And like, there was literally no time for us to do the podcast. But yeah, thank you guys.
Sayonara.
For listening. I want to have your babies. Let's do it. Let's hook up.
All right. Put your finger up my bum.